Welcome to Life in the Rabbit Hole, the Kaneo Parent Pod. I'm Lori Carice, a fellow parent living in the Kaneo Valley, and your host. Thank you for tuning in. For parent pod tales, community matters, and social topics, which include plenty of wellness content. Parenting is not a one-size-fits-all approach. It's as difficult as much as it's rewarding, and we've all heard from the beginning of this journey, it takes a village. So join us as we connect through life in the rabbit hole. For everyone, everywhere.
This episode is sponsored by Camp Keystone. Welcome back, summer campers. Registration is open for Camp Keystone's amazing summer programming experiences for kids ages 3 to 15. Visit campkeystone.com for June 14th through August 13th enrollment. Camp Keystone is COVID-19 experience. All guidelines are being met and they're ready to have fun. As you tune into this episode, I wanted to thank all of our guests for their contributions to the first season of Life in the Rabbit Hole. We're closing out this first season with a series on women who rise and inspire. You heard Kristen's story, and now I introduce Crystal's story.
So today I have with me Crystal Fox. I want to thank you for joining me today. Hi, Crystal.
Hello, everyone. I'm so glad that you started this and how fun, like having a space for moms to come and all different range bring us together.
I know. I think it's going to be great. It's a great place to share and talk about different, you know, ages and stages. You know, I'm a mature parent with kids entering, you know, the teenage years. And then I'm interviewing a lot of new moms that are, you know, just going through the diaper stages and pregnancy. So it's kind of fun to relive those experiences, but vicariously, because I don't want to go backwards. I do not miss those days of, you know, lugging the stroller and the diaper bag. So you wanted to join with me today on the topic of discussing normalizing that women lose children. Tell us your story.
Yeah, so really, as a young child, I remember still to this day where my mom was like, here's your baby doll, and you're going to take care of them. And at some point, I think I had roughly around 30 like little babies I had throughout the house. She really made it a point to be like, you're the mother. And I had my own like little kitchen, my own stroller. And I remember just taking care, like lugging around these dolls. And then at some point, because I was their mom, they needed to sleep in bed with me. So I had like a toppling pile of like little babies, all referencing the name like Chris or Crystal. K's or C's didn't matter. They were all mine. I loved them. And when I was younger, I had such a great relationship with my mom. Now, she was highly addicted to alcohol, so the nights weren't so great. But during the day, I got to connect with her, especially being the youngest of three. So being that young, I got to watch like the soap operas with her. I got to sit there in my own little chair and drink like warm milk as she drank her coffee. So we had a really tight connection, and I was so young. Like, I don't really fully remember my mom. Not, I don't ever remember her being fully sober, but I still had that connection with her compared to what my siblings did. And they were much older, like 12 to 9 years older. So they were out and about doing their own thing. And my father was around, but like I said, the nights were crazy. Now, at the age of 13, the addiction got really bad, and I did lose her. She got cirrhosis of the liver. And I remember not really understanding what was going on and how I felt. I was so young, and I didn't know what was to come. During the next couple years, I would really be lacking that connection, that missing that connection with my mom. And I was like, I know when I have a kid, I'm going to get that connection back. Like, we are going to sit there and do all the things me and my mom did, and I'm going to be the best mom ever. So that was pretty much my teen years, when you're spent like on the phone. Hey, you know, Joe from high school, you know, we're going to fall in love and have the house, the kids, everything. But by 20, I was married and became almost a lab rat and trying to have a child. I had spent most of my life on birth control, making sure I did not get pregnant, like overly making sure, to only now be in a marriage and unable to conceive. So I spent about 2 years dealing with PCOS, so polycystic ovarian syndrome, which I only found out because of the pain of a burst cyst. And I went to the emergency room and they're like, we don't know what it is. I'm like, what do you mean you don't know? And it was on my left side. They're like, well, not many things are on your left side, so we don't know. That alone took 6 months just for a diagnosis, and then ended up leading to an exploratory surgery, which was terrible because I left it with having problems with my back, like something within the surgery happened to my back. So I've always been a bigger woman. And every single time I go to the doctors, it is immediately, you have to lose weight. Immediately. No matter what it is, you have to lose weight in order to conceive. But in order for me to lose weight, insurance won't cover a nutritionist. They won't refer you to one. And they won't pair with a nutritionist to see if, is it really the weight issue? Is she staying consistent? Whether it's eating, healthy habits, all of those things. But as soon as I walk in, they see I'm bigger. It's like I'm pretty much shoved out the door. I was told in one of them that, like, after learning about my first miscarriage. Now, I'm with my husband now for 10 years, and we've had three. But I remember my first one where the guy literally set me down after the nurse told me I was losing my child. By simply just asking a question, oh, have you had any miscarriages before? I said no. And she goes, okay, one miscarriage. And that's how I was told I was losing my first child. My head never whipped around so fast. And I don't remember too much after, other than the doctor coming in, obviously I already knew what was going on, and him saying, well, this happens, infertility, you know, it's normal. Your body's attacking it. It was very, like, off the books. And he's like, but I'm assuming you're not going to want to try again, at least not right away, right? And I looked at my husband and I said, get me out of here. Get me out of here. Like, I can't. I remember writing, like, a huge letter to that office manager, just expressing about a year later how shameful I felt and how manipulated I felt in that room, being told of this loss and not really being supported. It was assumed I was going to lose a child simply because of how I looked. So moving on, like I said, there was three miscarriages we've had. We've been pretty open to, like, the family or people who are close to us. But you only really learn that other women are going through it if you kind of expose yourself first. And then they'd be like, oh, yeah, like 5 years ago, or actually 6 months ago. Yeah, definitely. That happened to me, too. There's not really that conversation. And in each one of these, I felt so alone. Like, depression set in. I felt like I couldn't talk to anyone. How could I measure up to these moms that are glorified on social media? How could I ever? And then my body, being told I wasn't enough, just took it to a whole new level. Now, I'm also not the only one having that loss. It's also my husband. Now, especially with men, they're not even bringing up the topic. Understandably enough, maybe some aren't used to it. But I know in the same reference, it says women need to be there for each other to talk about infertility. So do men. I've realized discussing, like, really getting to know people first, because it is a sensitive topic, just how much information there is out there that even doctors aren't utilizing. It's not about always giving a medication, because some of us just, like, I don't like taking pills. I don't like being prescribed medication, whether I'm sick or not. Like, even ibuprofen, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to do this. I got to take down this pill. But to be poked, prodded, all these tests ran, and you're just pretty much told, like, your body, not good enough, and you'll be lucky. And you have to take it very seriously, because the three, you know, times before, they suggest that you didn't. But we never sit there with our close friends and family and have the discussion of what infertility looks like. Most importantly, I don't think that people listen. You can pick up some things that people say as they're talking. But I've literally had friends and family, after knowing of our loss, three of them, be like, so when are you having kids? When is that happening? So are you deciding not to have kids? You're going to change your mind. I know you're going to change your mind if you choose not to have kids. So it's almost like this perception, like it's a task, it's a checklist or an application process to the American dream. But the truth is like, I need people to meet each other where they're at. You don't know if I'm not pregnant in that moment. You don't know, I could have just lost another and not have said anything. You just don't understand what people are going through simply by asking, you know, how many kids, oh, next month, are you going to be trying? It's very personal. I think that there's a conversation you can have with friends and family versus complete strangers, which I get asked a lot of times, especially on Clubhouse, where I'm a little bit more vulnerable. But in different gatherings, like a gathering here at my apartment building, it was a checklist. How many kids? House? Are you gonna buy a house after this apartment? Where do you work? How much do you make? And I was like, I need people to know that I'm human and to meet me there. Just meet me there. But we come up with the task list of, you know, is someone worthy? You know, what do we have to get to know them or buy them? And a lot of times a complete stranger will give me some advice or just chuck it up. Oh, it's going to happen one day. Yes. But that's like my personal story and what I'm dealing with. You know, get to know me first before giving me any real life advice on something that you didn't know I spent 10 years of my life going through just to trying to have a child. So I think just as women, it'd be nice to open up once we get to know each other, but not to expect it when we first meet each other. A lot of times you can say, hey, tell me a little bit about yourself, and someone is going to. It's just the questions, like we're all always ready to respond, right? Like I ask you something, Lori, you respond, I'm thinking of the next question. Instead of just hearing you out and saying, oh, well, she said that she had her daughter's soccer game tonight. So I know she has a daughter. So now I can reference this daughter. Oh, what's your daughter's name? You brought it up. You shared with me something personal. It doesn't have to be a checklist. And there's so many different groups and everything that I think is really good that is starting to form. I think Clubhouse is good for that, where we can connect on that level. Super safe spaces, which you've even created. I'll never forget when Melissa went before me on stage and really shared a similar story. And that was the first time I was speaking on your stage and you got to me and I was in tears. I was like, I'm not alone. Someone else can have like my same story. Like, this isn't just me, like fully a me problem. And me and her even talked like 2 days later and connected. And we really got to share our stories and know where, but we wanted to, like we discussed it. We had so many similarities. So I think that that's such a crucial part for women to come together. And it doesn't have to be a shameful thing. Even if a woman decides not to have children, whether she's had the loss or not, I think we can connect on just different levels, and just being open is really how I feel. So it's been quite the whirlwind, because I did start my podcast because I did feel like I lost my voice after my third one. I was like, it's me. I just, every negative thing you could think of, I just blame myself. All these moms with children, and it was beautiful. And I remember my friend saying, because I was never a mother of a 5-year-old. I'll never, you know, at this point, I'll never be a mother of a 13-year-old. But she was like, Crystal, you're a mom. Like, you have 3 babies in heaven. And that just like rang to me. I was like, oh my goodness. Like, she's right. She's completely right. And that day, she just made me, again, not feel so alone. And I think that's the biggest thing. I've seen it from a lot of people, is you just don't have to be alone. We can talk about it. And there's so many different people who are skilled, who coach through IVF. No one tells you about this stuff, that you can actually find support through other women because they've been through it. I sat there with someone who does the coaching through IVF, and I'm like, tell me like about this process before fully having to put myself through it so I can get some insight. But if she wasn't willing to share and I wasn't, I would never get the information that I actually need, because the doctor is only going to shut it down. So it's been a whirlwind, but I'm glad that we're starting the conversation. I just think that it could be elevated, especially in the medical world.
Okay, so you take me back to that doctor's visit. what would you suggest in sharing your story? If you could go back to that day, being yourself now after the loss of three babies, and go back and talk to that physician, what would you say to them?
I would say that the doctor 100% needs to have the conversation with the mom, the dad, or partners who are having this loss. I think that there should be a suggested therapist on staff, especially since they knew I was coming in to get results on losing my child. They can have a therapist on staff. And hey, you know what? We're going to take you into this room and let's just have a conversation, or just give you time, because you're having to then walk out and just bawling in front of complete strangers, especially women who are pregnant, other women who are dealing with the same situation or high risk and worried about what you're just now going through. So I don't think it's good for even the people in the waiting room to see what just happened. I think that there needs to be a different process, whether it's a different hall, some sort of area where you can really talk to someone, that's even an option. It could be even virtual. Hey, you go in this room. You can choose virtual. You could choose not to, but the options are there for both. So that's what I think. And assuming any assumption made inside of a medical office when it comes to infertility, I would just say it's lack there of knowledge. And, you know, a doctor can't tell me whether or not I want to try again. He could have said, let's take a look at this and let's make a plan. I'm going to take 2 weeks. You know, you're going to experience this, because they also don't tell you what you're going to experience. And here's some ways that we can help. But really, they're like, my job is to tell you and get you out. So I just wish that there was that support there. And I can only imagine what the people who saw me and all the women and, you know, their fears kind of just staring at them as I ran out of there bawling.
Well, Crystal, your voice does matter. Have you ever considered campaigning for that type of programming?
I haven't actually before today. I think Clubhouse has helped, like actually meeting other people so I don't feel alone in the process has helped. Writing that letter in hopes that that doctor will never put someone through such thing again was kind of me having a voice in it. But this would be something moving forward I want to dive into, especially there's so many other things that have to deal with infertility that they're just not even testing. They're not even looking into.
So you feel a little abandoned?
Yes, very much so.
So, and that's by medical professionals. So I also heard you say, you know, you belong to, or you hear other moms and you feel like, you know, they're possibly these hero status, like, oh, look at my beautiful family. I mean, first of all, we all experience that as parents. I've been a part of so many different mom groups, especially on Facebook, and they're actually very toxic rooms. So the mom shaming is real. You know, you talked about people approaching you. Oh, when are you going to start a family? You've been married a long time. When are you going to get a house or this or that? You know, that happens to be people maybe not knowing what to say and not knowing you very well. And you know, maybe they are trying to start a conversation with you, and I, you know, please try to let it roll off of your back and move on. I know it's not easy. I'm sure it's very difficult also for people who have lost, you know, living children, perhaps once had three and no longer. It's very difficult, and I'm sure you have to kind of learn a response that you feel is appropriate for the other person to receive and that you're okay with, kind of having that little stock answer, unfortunately. But having that community and those real conversations are very important. And you know how I am on Clubhouse. I'm all about deadlines. I'm like, oh, if you're thinking about doing this, you know, I'm going to kind of put it on you. Crystal, I'm putting something on you. I am going to challenge you. I want you to be, you're already an advocate in this space for moms with loss. I would love for you to write some kind of letter to your congressperson, you know, something that you want to advocate for, programs to help people, you know, I mean, if there's a school shooting or just even a death or a tragedy at a school, it's happened even at my school, my children's school, you know, a parent was lost in an accident and they had counselors there, you know, ready to talk to kids. And we had fires, the Woolsey fires crept right up 3 feet to my door. My kids returned to school. There were counselors ready to talk about grief, about homes burning down and their own loss or their friends now being homeless. So if the school system can put something like that together and there's other programming, I mean, why isn't there something for a mom and a dad's, you know, mental health support to get through this process? And that's what I'm getting out of this. I mean, I appreciate you so much sharing your story. I've heard a little bit on Clubhouse. This is definitely more. But I mean, I would love to task you with trying to help make a difference for another mom. I know you do that with your podcast. I know you do that with your conversations and with you just being a strong and shining example. And you know how I said I'd cry once a week on Clubhouse? Here we go. But I care about you. I do. I know your voice makes a difference. And I hope that other women who are listening in today, you know, whether they connect with your story because of loss, have heard you and want to advocate with you. So are there any final words that you want to offer a mom struggling or even concerned with her pregnancy?
Yes. Know that the medical office doesn't hold you, and the knowledge that you can receive that there's so many more people who are willing to help. And I've been so crucial about reaching out because you do feel so lonely. So reach out. Even you can find great connections. I always tell people to go to Clubhouse and just even sit in the audience. You will hear it and you will find the people that you need. Like finding your tribe to go through this and your worries, you just need to talk about them. Like get it out. Don't hone it inside and don't be ashamed that you are fearful of some things or that you are dealing with infertility, because that doesn't make up your worth. Your worth is already there. You're worthy where you stand. So know that this is a journey and there are so many more of us. I promise you, there's so many more of us going through it and we are with you. So.
I'm going to share one thing that just kind of came to mind. I mean, it's something I don't think about often because, you know, I was very fortunate with my pregnancies to have, you know, two live births. My children are growing up. But when you talked about the medical, you know, kind of like the humanity of the medical field, I remember going in for a routine visit, my second pregnancy. Now, mind it, I'm a little bit older. I got a later start, 38 when I had my first baby and 41 when I had my second. So I was just barely 41. So most of my pregnancy, I was age 40. And I remember a routine visit. My regular doctor wasn't there. And there was like an intern that seemed a little inexperienced and they couldn't find a heartbeat. And that was the whole response. Oh, I can't find a heartbeat. I'm going to send you over to ER. What? And I was alone. My husband actually, I was already going through a lot of difficulty in my marriage and I was actually even separated during my second pregnancy and he was living in California. I was still living in Texas at the time. We had hopes of recovering the marriage. It ended shortly after my daughter's birth, but I was alone in the office and all they said was, we don't hear a heartbeat. I'm going to send you to the emergency room. That was it. What? What? You know, give me more explanation, search, get somebody else in here. So they sent me to an ER office off property, meaning sending me to drive, crying. I call a girlfriend of mine, asking her to meet me there, telling her what's going on. I sat in the ER waiting for my turn for like an hour and a half. She showed up almost at that time, she apologized for being so late. Years later, she actually told me she got in a car accident racing to see me. She just did not want to put that on me. And so I did end up having an ultrasound. They found the heartbeat, you know, more experienced technician. But for an hour and a half, I thought I was carrying the death of my child. And I believe I was 5 months pregnant. So I wanted to share that with you. You know, you opened up so much. That's something I have hardly shared with anybody. I think sometimes when you go through that tragedy and there's that thankful recovery, you put the bad stuff behind. You know, it's in the back of your mind. You remember it, but you don't talk about it. And it's something I've actually never even told my 10-year-old daughter, that there was a time where I didn't know my pregnancy was going to survive. I was also told in my first pregnancy that I most likely was carrying a Down syndrome child. She is not Downs, but you know, we all have those worries. We carry a lot of worries during our pregnancy. And Crystal, you are a mom. You are a mom.
Thank you so much.
And seriously. You're part of the community. Okay? You are. And I care about you. I really hope that I know that your words matter, and I hope that they do with others. And can you tell us about your podcast? I'd love for people to listen in.
Yeah, my podcast is Crystal Ball Clarity of It All. Like I said, I started it when I felt like I didn't have a voice. And I'm taking this season to give other people their voices. So they are coming on to share their story. But better yet, you are taking a journey with me to find clarity through the crazy. So, yeah, it just has me have that voice. And you truly start to heal once you start talking to people about it and hearing other people's stories, because you have no idea what someone else is going through at all. And it's an eye-opener. It's getting clarity.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest and opening up today. With that, I'm going to go ahead and say goodbye. And again, to our listeners, I hope that you have taken something here from Crystal's journey, her continued journey, and will also tune into her podcast. So thank you, Crystal.
Thank you so much, Lori.
Thank you so much for listening today. And please subscribe to our podcast so that you can be alerted each time we drop a new episode. For bonus content, be sure to join us as a member and receive Green Room Diaries After the Final Cut, Confessions of a Kaneo Valley Mom, as well as our exclusive wellness workshops. From one parent to another, we've got this. Just believe in yourself and remember, we're our own worst critics. Tell yourself and another that they're doing a good job.